Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
I thought you were going to do a title. The cadence, it was like you were going to be Sir Matt.
I was leaving it up for you.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome back to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today, we are into Samwell 5 of A Storm of Swords.
That is correct. Right?
Okay, yeah, I was gonna
maybe offer you the title of Bud Knight.
We need avatars of you being the Bud Knight, like from the commercials.
God, man, those are great.
Those are some of the best.
I remember they killed him. They killed him off. I was like, well, dang, man.
Maybe he can be resurrected by Melisandre or something.
Maybe.
What a legend.
And then they did a tie-in. They did like a tie-in to Game of Thrones. Do you remember they did like a Game of Thrones?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Sweet.
How many Game of Thrones commercials are there?
Not like actual Game of Thrones.
That are influenced by Game of Thrones or feature someone from Game of Thrones. How many do you think there are?
I mean, if you count out like, you know, weird mobile game apps.
No. I'm talking like it's like Jon Snow and a T-Mobile app.
Yeah, I don't know.
No? Okay, probably I was going to say we should rank Westeros commercials.
We could look it up and see. That'd be an interesting thing to take a look at.
If we hit the bottom of the barrel, we could always rank late night show appearances from the actor.
Geez, all that stuff with, what's his name, where they were like Jon Snow at a dinner party and stuff like that, and Melisandre like babysitting. You remember all that with the, what's like the late guy's name?
Craig Ferguson?
No, Seth something or other.
Oh, Seth Meyers.
Yeah. Remember, do you ever see those?
No, I've never seen
it. He did these skits. Oh, you've never seen? Oh, he did this like skits where it's like Jon Snow's at a dinner party and stuff like that. And
it's hilarious.
Oh, there's one of Melisandre like babysitting kids and stuff. I'm like,
I want to watch these.
You've never seen them? They're freaking out. Oh, we got to watch them.
That sounds amazing, dude.
You got to watch it. So let's see. We have some ravens here. We'll do a quick fire on some ravens, if that's okay.
Yeah. So I don't know if I told you this last time. This is my only update. I'm going to the Game of Thrones studio in Belfast next week. Cool. Very excited. So I bought the Stark House package, which means I get a direwolf plushie, and I think I get to ride on some dragon simulator ride or some madness.
Sick.
Dude, I'm gonna take so many pictures. I'm so excited.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, dude. Ireland's the best. It's the best country. I love it.
I'm down.
Yeah, man. It's gonna be cool.
Okay. So we got one from Lady Susan, who we just recorded our Patreon episode for the episode 2. Remember last time I told you that during the scene of Daenerys, the HVAC guy, I was like, Anyway, so she said, I have to let you know that today's podcast is still making me laugh about how the HVAC guy arrived during the Game of Thrones rewatch. I feel a little desensitized to the scene. However, that would be uncomfortable. I needed a good laugh. Hey, you know, I love
it. Was a good laugh.
I do.
Yeah. The, what do we call you? The Portland pervert? Is that?
Oh, geez.
That's going to be our next shirt.
I thought I had a good raven
Man, that's too funny.
But I guess not. People are saying they're ready for boiled leather. I always.
Have we got some ravens about that? That's exciting.
I know. The problem is sometimes I miss them. I know we did the Arya Stark journey one. This person sent one. I can't remember if I read it. But this is Nicholas, who says, love the pod and I listen all the time. He said, in preparation of House of the Dragon season 3, I thought it'd be good to make a family tree of the Targaryens to keep everything straight in case one forgets who's brother, sister, aunt, uncle, or whatever. The solid lines would be like legitimate children, dotted lines are bastards, and triangles represent marriages. I don't see it. So I thought he made one, but I don't know if he sent it to us. Because I don't see like an attachment or anything. Well, Nicholas, if you're listening, maybe resend that. I don't see an attachment. I could be
done. Please do. And you start getting into those Targaryen family trees, and that's where you start getting in the theory territory. Did you start? Whoa, who's this?
Well, we've talked about it where you start looking at all the different people that could potentially be Targaryens. We talked about like Aaron Brightflame. I mean, he goes over there. That's legit Targaryen line. And where does that go? Does he have kids?
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's right. Necessarily Blackfyre. So there's,
you know what we should do, Matt? We should look at each generation of the Targaryens and we each pick out a character and kind of do a deep dive and present. Like each episode, we do a generation of Targaryens and we try to figure out like who is the most important Targaryen of that time.
Yeah.
That could be cool.
I think we missed this one. I want to read it. His name is David, and he basically sent us one just saying, because sometimes if we get like two or three, then I get lost in the email because we get all this freaking stuff about people wanting to join their podcast member network and, you know,
yeah,
business spam emails.
We're popular.
He basically says, David says, who do you think is the third head of the dragon?
Oh, that's a huge question.
But we've talked about it, we've done a lot of episodes and stuff and talking about it, but
okay, then the presumption is that the three heads include Daenerys and Jon Snow.
I would imagine. Yeah.
Okay. I obviously Fagon kind of feels like the natural, like, kind of slide in fit. And I would say that in some ways that is what I would go with, because I think we all think he's a fake, but he could also just be a Blackfyre.
Sure.
Right. And then it's almost like a double cross from George where he's like, you thought he was a nobody, but in fact he is, he matters. Could he be Ned and the Shard Dane's child? Who knows?
Right. Yeah. The thing about the whole three headed the dragon business, I know everyone's, we try to ram it in, but the problem is we don't know if it's like what should the, was the three heads of the dragon just going to be like, you know, should it, is it like three siblings? Is it like a parent and siblings? Is that an aunt? Is it, does it just have to be three Targaryens? Does it have to be three? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, the dragon has three heads, and that whole thing is about, you know, Daenerys needing other people to ride her dragons.
Because maybe Rhaegar, in theory, thought the three heads of the dragon would be Jon, Aegon Targaryen, and maybe what's her name who died, Rhaenys. Those would be his three children. Those would be the three heads of the dragon.
Yeah, you know what? Now that I'm thinking about this.
If those were three Targaryen children, that could be the three heads of the dragon. But and you know what? They all might be alive.
Yeah. Does it have to be a Targaryen though, Matt?
I think it does.
I'll tell you my pick. I think if I had to go with the secondary pick, where it's not Fagon, it could be Tyrion. And I'm gonna piggyback this off of the fact that I think we talked about last week. We talked about it recently, though. My whole idea that Tyrion will most likely burn Castle Rock with Dragonfire, and if the whole idea, like, there's a chance Tyrion rides a dragon in A Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah.
Like I don't think it's anywhere near impossible, especially with all the dragon foreshadowing. Now Tyrion does not need to be a Targaryen bastard and all that stuff. But it might be Tyrion. And if I'm not mistaken, did they all have issues with their mothers? Right? What's Dany's relationship with her mom? Is her mom dead? Like, I know she's dead now, but I mean, was she dead before Dany, like, left?
She dies. I'm blanking. I'm just
giving birth.
Having a day. Yeah, she dies giving birth to Dany.
So Jon Snow's mom also died giving birth, and so did Tyrion's.
Let's see here.
Holy shit.
Rhaella Targaryen. She dies on Dragonstone. That's right. Yes. Giving birth to Daenerys. Remember during a storm?
They all killed their mothers during birth.
I never thought of that. That's an interesting parallel between all three.
Dude. That's the three head of the dragon. That has to be. That has to be it.
I will say that I have not thought about that parallel. That all three of them their mother dies during childbirth. That is an interesting. See, this is why it's fun to even explore theories we've talked about a million times, because now my mind's blown. I gotta start putting these pieces together.
Oh man, that it has to be a little bit of something, right? I'm just saying, with all the references of Tyrion with Dragonfire, him burning things, having these dragon dreams, like, he could end up actually being the third head of the dragon.
Yeah, the only problem with Tyrion's birth is, like, Jon's birth and Dany's birth. There's definitely there's a lot going on around it, right? I mean, it's like, yeah. I mean, there's like battles and war, and you know, it's like during a tumultuous time. So Tyrion's is just kind of a birth.
Yeah, he just had a big head.
Yeah. So,
Well, that's something to think about. I mean, folks, if you're
listening, it is kind of interesting that all three of that is a parallel. I will say thank you for sharing the question, even though it's one we've talked about a bunch, because now I have not thought of that.
And maybe that will convince other people that Tyrion could be the third head of the dragon, and they'll send in more proof to back my theory.
Okay.
I wonder if anyone's ever brought that up. I'm going to search on the Song of Ice and Fire Reddit or something.
That's an interesting search.
Someone probably realized that at some point, right?
You'd think. Maybe not. That could be our Bend the Knee exclusive.
Well, let's hold off on that. Jeez. Don't get me in trouble again.
All right. Well, hey, let's dive into today's chapter, which is the last Sam chapter of this book, because we only have like two more chapters to go, which is crazy. I think it's three if you count the epilogue.
Yeah.
But Samwell V of the Storm of Swords, King Stannis has brought several of the Black Brothers before him to make known his anger about them taking too long to select a new Lord Commander. Stannis sees through Janis Lynn's fawning, having known the man as a bribe taker in King's Landing. The king makes it clear that after they finally vote in a new Lord Commander, he plans to take all the castles along the wall, except for the three currently occupied by the Watch, which he will use to garrison his forces. He also plans to either take or be granted the gift, stating that he intends to help the Watch guard the wall. He commands the builders to deliver reports on the conditions of the abandoned castles and informs the men gathered that night fires will be lit before the gates of all castles. When Melisandre mentions the impending war, Maester Aemon is aware that she speaks of the prophesied War of the Dawn. After the others have left, Aemon asks to see the fabled sword Lightbringer. Through Sam's eyes, Sam describes the sword as glowing, but yet no flames. Stannis questions Sam about Dragonglass, making it known that there are great deposits of obsidian beneath Dragonstone, and that he intends to have it mined and brought to the wall. The king asks Sam to show him the Black Gate, as he intends to make the Nightfort his seat. And Sam agrees, although he is not sure if the gate will open for a man not of the Black. When they leave, Maester Aemon asks Sam if he felt any heat emanating from the sword, and he realizes that he did not. Aemon speaks of the choosing, subtly implying that Sam could do something to help speed the process. Determined to put aside the bickering between the two leading candidates, Sam speaks with both Cotter Pike and Dennis Malister individually. Both are aware they will not be elected and agree that Slint would be a bad choice, so Sam asks if they would step aside if the right candidate were to be named. Playing one off the other, using their dislike for the other, Sam sets it up so that each man will lend his support to Jon Snow.
Yeah. One great chapter. Samwell always has interesting things going on. In my opinion, he's one of my favorite POVs. I think he's maybe the most underrated POV there is. This is kind of a big moment for Sam's character as well. Obviously, Sam the Slayer, he's bagged Ginny at this point. I mean, he's flexing big time, but Matt, he's politicking here, dude. He's doing his damnedest to help Jon Snow. And I think this is probably going to be very similar to what he ends up doing towards the end of the series. I think he's going to be helping maneuver pieces to hopefully, you know, put Jon somewhere in the power structure of Westeros, possibly. So I think that's big. He also gets the information about the Dragonglass and Dragonstone. That's definitely going to play out. There's a reason there. Here's another thing for you, can we go off into Wonderland a little bit here and just have some fun? Okay, cool. So, when I hear Stannis being like, go through the Black Gate, I want a night fort, da 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 da. Man, oh man, could you see any possibility of this? That Melisandre ends up dumping Stannis for Jon Snow, resurrecting him. Let's say Stannis survives or does not survive this battle with Ramsay, right? Let's just say he does. Okay, he's gravely wounded something. He ends up going back to the Night Fort. We don't hear from Stannis for a while. All of a sudden, the wall falls. The White Walker's coming down into Westeros. What if Stannis is the Night King?
I know.
It's just an interesting thing, because I almost could see a situation where Stannis loses everything, about to lose life, loses his daughter, obviously, because he's going to burn Shireen in the books, according to George. So this makes you wonder if that is enough stuff from being turned on by Melisandre at some point to him to be like pushed into this really dark arc. Where he ends up,
like, we always think Euron's going to be the villain, but it could end up being like Stannis or something.
And they both could be, right? They both absolutely could be. And Stannis's role is more along with the others. I mean, it's definitely possible.
Well, I will say I hadn't really thought about him, you know, like, the just because his arc does not go that way. But he talks about he talks right here about, oh, I'm going to go take the night for it.
Yeah,
it's sort of a parallel, because, oh, here's this person going to the night for it with a sorceress woman who can enchant people, and it plays off the legends of the Corpse Queen.
Exactly. So I'm drawing that parallel, and I'm like, is this something?
Yeah.
Also, I don't know if you guys heard that, but there was thunder so loud it like shook my house. That was crazy.
I heard something. I thought it was out of my house.
It was me.
Oh, okay.
Either it was thunder or a bomb went off.
Well, considering your proximity to,
yeah, I know, that's why we're DC.
You never know.
It's also just a dude riding around my neighborhood with a crappy muffler, and I want to go challenge him to
fight.
Yeah.
But I can hear right now is my creaky office chair. I'm like, oh God, it's creaking so much. I love this chair. It's still super comfy, but dude, you gotta get a new one.
Throw some WD-40 on that bad boy.
Spray it down. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's continue our dive in here to this chapter. So it is kind of interesting. By the way, this is a shorter chapter, as it's only.
Don't tell me it's so
bad. It's only a couple pages. The big takeaway from this is ultimately that John is going to, and this is actually what we'll talk about next time in the John chapter, what happens is that John, we know, is about to get elected. And so John then ultimately goes to Stannis and says, oh, hey, I can't take up your offer on Winterfell. Like, that's the big part of this. Cause these are actually, like, you know, sometimes the chapters, we jump all over the place, but this is really like one event and you just get two pieces of the story, but we'll talk about that next time. Cause we're have some like a week off or something. So, anyway, it is setting this up, and I love the back, like the politics of the Night's Watch, right? Oh, but we still need 2/3 votes, and they're like hardcore on it. They're not just going to do it just because Stannis shows up and says, this is what I want to do.
Yeah, still has like pride in this being its own institution, like its own branch.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And at the same time, though, it is like I wonder if everyone there believes that Joffrey is a bastard. Right? Because, I mean, it seems like there's like Stannis shows up and they're going along with it because
I think they just want somebody there.
They're going along with it because they believe he is the rightful. Like, how many, I'm curious, you know, I wonder how many people there actually believe, like, well, you know, Joffrey probably is a bastard.
It depends on how long they've been there, you know?
Yeah. Because, I mean, Stannis is, as we know, the rightful king. He is the rightful king of Westeros.
Oh, without
a
shadow of a doubt. Yeah. I mean, we're by the book here. Okay.
Yeah.
Here bend the knee. Yeah, I think it's more so a lot of people at the Night's Watch are convinced that this big battle is coming, whether it be just from the wildlings, you know, trying to come south of the wall, or the White Walkers. And I think they're at the point now where they're like, well, Stannis is here to help. He's offering help. And also, if he ends up winning this thing, fantastic. The king cares about the Night's Watch. It'll be repaid possibly. So I think that that's most likely why they go with him. I'm sure some of them believe he should be king, and I'm definitely positive some of them believe that Joffrey's a bastard. I wonder what Alistair Thorne thinks. That's what I'd like to know.
He's a Targaryen. Does Alistair Thorne has to know that Maester Aemon is a Targaryen? Right. You would think he would have been able to piece that together over.
Well, he had to have, because it wasn't like a big secret in the books, right? It wasn't like because like you could say, oh, what happened to the son of what is it, Maekar? I can't remember his dad's name. But, Aemon's dad, Maekar, right? Or yeah. Baelor. I can't remember. Doesn't matter neither here nor there. You can just look at the tree and be like, what happened to Aemon? Oh, he went to the Night's Watch. Like, he's a maester at the Night's Watch. So Alistair Thorne definitely knows.
Yeah, and do you know who else knows? Stannis. He says so in this chapter. One of the coolest lines is here. Let me get it pulled up. I'll read this whole thing. Your father is an able soldier, King Stannis said. He defeated my brother once at Ashford. Mace Tyrell has been pleased to claim the honors for that victory, but Lord Randall has decided matters before Tyrell ever found the battlefield. He slew Lord Caffron with that great Valyrian sword of his and sent his head to Aerys. The king rubbed his jaw with a finger. You are not the sort of son I would expect such a man to have. I am not the sort of son he wanted, sire. If you had not taken the black, you would make a useful hostage, Stannis mused. He has taken the black, Maester Aemon pointed out. I am well aware of that, the king said. I am aware of more than you know, Aemon Targaryen. The old man inclined his head. I am only Aemon, sire. We give up our house names when we forge our maester's chain. The king gave that curt nod, as if to say he knew and did not care. And then they go on to talk about the others.
Yeah.
It's such a quick little line. But it's so cool because it's such a big deal when he reveals it to Jon, and then Stannis knows,
brings a bunch of context and history. And this is also good for the reader because, as we know, Aemon is going to go on his final journey with Sam.
Right.
And, it makes that moment hurt a little bit more as we learn more about the lovable Maester Aemon.
Yeah. And you can tell Stannis is willing to do whatever it takes. It's like kind of weird because it speaks actually a lot to Stannis's character, where on some degree he is like as by the book as possible. Mm-hmm. And then on the other degree, he's like, I'll do whatever it takes in order to get what I want, which would include telling Jon, well, your days in the Night's Watch can be over because I said so, which is true. If he's king, I mean, technically he can say whatever he wants.
Yeah.
It's this weird dynamic where he's just like, as by the book as possible and not by, and a lot of that is Melisandre's influence. And that's just, it's one of the actual kind of subtle things about Stannis' character that is very cool to watch, because you can see just how much influence mm-hmm. Melisandre has over him. But it's tiny little lines like that sometimes where it's just like, man, it's like the coolest part of the whole chapter.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it's a subtle shift over many, many books and thousands of pages, but you're right. It starts being more about the, anything I have to do. Wait, is that utilitarian? Is that the right word?
Maybe.
I think so. It's basically saying that the ends justify the means.
Sure.
And he becomes more and more like that, to the point where we know George gave the showrunners the moment where he burns his daughter.
Right.
And it's like, you'll hold an onion knight the task for what he did in the past, but you're burning your daughter?
Yeah.
What? And that's, and by the way, I mentioned earlier, kind of kidding about Stannis becoming the Night King or something, but like when Stannis has that moment of what he realizes that he's lost, like.
It also makes you wonder too, because the things that Melisandre is willing to do is mm-hmm. the same thing. She's willing to do whatever it takes to defeat the others.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Burning anyone's kids in order to do that. So is Stannis doing this because he just wants to be king? Or is he doing it because he is also, it's kind of like, you're influenced by the people that are around you. Mm-hmm. It's like he's being influenced by Melisandre, who also is of that same mindset.
And it's telling him that he's the divine, he's Azor Ahai. I mean, it's, sure. It's all kind of combined. Like every part of that is a part of the reason why I think he starts the shift. But when you start taking a heavy hand and, you know, renouncing people's oaths, and you also believe that you are divinely anointed, that's where you end up getting a leader that's terrifying.
Yeah. We do get just at the end of this, and some of this we talked about in the just the summary and whatnot, but I do want to bring up one kind of final point here, and that is this line here from Aemon, which is also really cool. This is actually one of the cooler Maester Aemon chapters, really.
Yeah.
Just saying, you felt no heat, did you? And the scabbard that held the sword is a wood and leather? Yes. I heard the sound when his grace drew out the blade. Was the leather scorched, Sam? Did the wood seem burned or blackened? No, Sam admitted, not that I could see. Maester Aemon nodded. Back in his own chambers, he asked Sam to set a fire and help him to the chair beside the hearth. It's hard to be so old, he sighed as he settled onto the cushion, and harder still to be so blind. I miss the sun and books. I miss books most of all. Aemon waved a hand. I shall have no more need of you till the choosing. And then it kind of just goes on just a little bit, but that's just kind of where Aemon's arc will go as when we get back to him. And then in our read of Boiled Leather with Sam is he's kind of like, you can tell he's already like, he's ready to kind of move on. Like, yeah, kind of
done. He's ready for it to be over. And also begins to think about his life and what it means to be a Targaryen. And his one real dream is to see Dany and her dragons. He can't believe it's happening. And part of this is because he watched his brother supposedly try to hatch dragon eggs. Like, he's seen so many people in his family die wanting what Daenerys has.
Right.
So he can
I wonder to any degree, is he, I mean, here's Stannis, this guy who also like killed most of the rest of your family. And he's like, kind of a jerk to you. And now you're like, you're going to the Citadel and you want to, in a way, his final thing is helping his family. That's what he wants to do. Is he's telling Sam, you know, Sphinx is the riddle, and you know, Daenerys, and all of these. I mean, that's what he's thinking of.
Yeah, and all that stuff leads to a lot of fun discussions.
Yeah, tons of stuff. Yeah.
So Aemon really gives us one for the road on the way out. Major props to the dude.
Yeah. Okay. Well, like I said, that's mostly it. And again, Jimmy and I are doing a Game of Thrones rewatch. Mm-hmm. Over on Patreon or Apple Premium or if you want any more of that, you can certainly go check that out. But we will be back next time. It's definitely not going to be next week, but we will be back next time, and that will be with A Storm of Swords chapter 79, John 12.
And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheknee.com.
We will see you next time, and remember that winter is coming.
Boom. Oh, I should end this. Hey, you can't do a preamble. Boom.